Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News.
I'm Rania Kallik, and you're listening to Dispatches.
Human rights lawyer Stephen Donziger has been thrust into an epic battle with one of the biggest oil companies in the world. He helped win a multi-billion dollar lawsuit against the oil giant Chevron for polluting the Amazon in Ecuador and poisoning the indigenous community who lives there. Ever since then, Chevron has waged a relentless and global campaign to avoid accountability and to punish Donziger. In what reads like a Hollywood thriller, a U.S. judge with ties to Chevron has conspired with the oil giant to try to put Donziger behind bars. As a result of the case, Donziger has been confined to his home on house arrest since 2019. He's speaking to us now from house arrest. Hello, Stephen Donziger. Welcome to Breakthrough News.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks so much for joining us. I can't believe I said since 2019. So you've been on house arrest since, I think, August of 2019. That's almost 2 years. I gave a little background, but I guess could you start by explaining to our listeners and viewers how you got on house arrest and the case against you? And then we can go from there.
Sure. Well, this is a 28-year litigation that, and the key point is in the year 2011, with my help and the help of other lawyers, indigenous peoples in the Amazon and rural communities in the Amazon of Ecuador won an historic $9.5 billion pollution judgment against Chevron. Courts in Ecuador found the company had deliberately and systematically dumped literally billions of gallons of cancer-causing toxic waste into the rainforest, into waters, waterways, streams, rivers that the local communities relied on for their drinking water, for their bathing and for their fishing. And really there was a mass industrial poisoning designed by Chevron. This was not an accident. It was designed to save money on their production costs at the expense of some of the most vulnerable communities on the planet. And you know, the upshot is there's a disaster, an environmental disaster in Ecuador that's called the Amazon Chernobyl. It's probably the worst oil-related disaster in the world. People are dying every day from this. It's a slow mass murder, and there's no medical care, and Chevron did it. Well, they did it through their predecessor company, Texaco. So when we won this lawsuit in Ecuadorian courts, where, by the way, Chevron insisted the trial be held and where Chevron had accepted jurisdiction and promised to pay the judgment, they decided not to pay the judgment, and instead they started to target the lawyers, including me. And I would say primarily me, largely because I live in New York. I've been to Ecuador over 200 times working on this case over the years. And they found a judge here in New York who started to make rulings against me without a jury, claiming that the judgment in Ecuador was obtained by fraud. And I just want to point out, it was not obtained by fraud. It's been affirmed by Ecuador's Supreme Court, Ecuador's Constitutional Court, and also by Canada's Supreme Court in an enforcement action. So there's been 28 judges who've ruled the judgment is valid. There's one U.S. trial judge, Lou Kaplan, who ruled it was obtained by fraud and has been targeting me ever since based on, you know, erroneous evidence presented by Chevron. And the latest saga and the reason I'm in house arrest is because he ordered that I turn over my computer and cell phone to Chevron, which would violate my ethical obligations to protect confidential information and attorney-client privileges. So rather than turn it over, I appealed the order, and he charged me with criminal contempt of court. Importantly, his charges were rejected by the U.S. attorney here, the federal prosecutor, who refused to prosecute me. So Judge Kaplan appointed a private law firm that has Chevron as a client to prosecute me. So I'm essentially being prosecuted by Chevron, which is why, in my opinion, I'm locked up as the only person in this entire country locked up on a misdemeanor charge of any sort prior to trial. And it's been almost 2 years. Chevron's goal, I mean, this is the first corporate prosecution in U.S. history. We think it's illegal, unconstitutional, obviously violates the rule of law. No country that respects the rule of law would allow a corporation to prosecute the person who's held them accountable or prosecute their main critic. But that's what's happening to me. And that, in my opinion, explains why you know, this extraordinarily punitive and unnecessary measure of locking me up in my own home for almost 2 years is taking place.
I mean, what's so stunning about this is the unprecedented nature of a sitting judge. So you mentioned the prosecutor, like the state prosecutor refused to prosecute the case. And so right. The judge appointed a private law firm with connections to Chevron to prosecute the case. Like, has that ever happened anywhere no. else in the country?
Well, in very rare occasions, a judge can appoint a private lawyer to prosecute a case if there's like a conflict of interest or a lack of resources in a particular, you know, region. But I mean, it hasn't happened more than 10 times in the last several decades. What's never happened, even in that small sample of cases that's happening in my case, is appointing a law firm that has a flagrant conflict of interest, that is, has Chevron as a client, to prosecute Chevron's main critic. And I'll add on top of that, the public is paying for this prosecution. The law firm Seward and Kissel was billed over $500,000 to prosecute me in a misdemeanor. The reality is Chevron's financing the case because they're using a second law firm to do most of the work for the Seward and Kissel firm, and they're paying millions of dollars to lock me up. And the Wall Street Journal recently reported that this happened way back in 2010. They tried to get me prosecuted criminally by the federal prosecutor, who at that time declined to prosecute me. So, you know, this is part of a 10-year what we call demonization or criminalization plan by Chevron to make me look like a criminal, when in reality, I'm a human rights lawyer who did very successful work in holding Chevron accountable. Chevron doesn't want to pay. This whole concept of this case, meaning, you know, people with no money, indigenous peoples aligning themselves with lawyers in the North and, you know, people who donate money to make sure you can do such a case, that's terrifying to Chevron, and they refusing to pay the judgment, and they're attacking me. And unfortunately, they have wrested control of a certain pocket of the U.S. federal judiciary. And with the help of this judge and another judge, Judge Kaplan and Judge Preska, they've locked me up. By the way, just one other bizarre feature to my experience is usually when, excuse me, when a case is assigned in New York and all over the federal system in the United States, it's assigned randomly. You know, there's a random lot, so you can't steer a case to a particular judge. In this case, Judge Kaplan ignored that rule and appointed a close colleague, Loretta Preska. Preska is considered one of the most pro-corporate judges on the federal bench. She's a leader of what we call here the Federalist Society, which is a pro-corporate legal group, to which Chevron, none other than Chevron, is one of the major donors. I'm just surrounded by Chevron. I have a Chevron prosecutor, a Chevron judge, and by the way, the main witnesses against me for my supposed crime, which is not really a crime, no one's ever been prosecuted for what I'm being prosecuted for, they're Chevron lawyers who are paid $1,300 an hour and up by Chevron to go after me. It's really scary. Obviously, this goes way beyond me, goes way beyond Stephen Donziger. I mean, this is a corporate playbook by the fossil fuel industry, in my view, to be deployed against lawyers and human rights defenders who are maybe just a little too successful in holding them accountable.
So before, I want to talk a little bit more about how just how much these people, this entity, this corporation, and all those attached to it have attacked you. But let's go back to the why. Because, you know, you talked a little bit about the oil, about the Ecuador case. Can you talk about that case? When did it start? How long did it take? What did Texaco, I guess now Chevron, do? And, you know, what was the ultimate decision in that case, which explains a lot about why you're being attacked?
Yeah. So basically, we proved with evidence in court in Ecuador that Chevron, through Texaco, had gone into the Amazon in the mid-60s and designed a system of oil extraction that included, it was over a 1,500, very large 1,500 square mile area, six oil fields, hundreds of wells. And they did a bunch of stuff that just was completely substandard. For example, rather than disposing of what's called drilling muds, which is the toxic waste that comes out of the ground with heavy metals and cancer-causing chemicals, rather than dispose of it properly, they just built pits out of the, gouged pits out of the jungle floor, put it there, and then built pipes from the sides of the pits into nearby rivers and streams and just ran it off for years and years into the water sources of the local population, such that they were exposed constantly to you know, cancer-causing toxins. I mean, who would do that, right? I mean, that was a deliberate decision to save money, knowing that people would die as a result. And there were a lot of other substandard practices. You know, there's something called water or production, which is the benzene-laden wastewater that comes out of the ground with the oil, and it needs to be separated out and disposed of while the oil goes to market, you know, through the goes to the refinery and onto the commercial market. The wastewater, they just built these enormous industrial-sized pipes, and they were running 4 million gallons of that into rivers on a daily basis at the height of the operation, again, causing cancer. No warning to the people, no medical care, no environmental planning, no environmental assessment. I mean, it was a completely reckless operation. I mean, I've talked to so many oil workers who've worked all over the world, and believe me, there's a lot of pollution out there from this industry. No one's ever seen it as bad as it is in Ecuador. I mean, I'm talking about in the industry. So, you know, we presented the evidence in an Ecuadorian court, despite enormous pressure from Chevron to delay the trial, obstruct justice, you know, not rule. Naturally, based on these facts, ruled against Chevron. And Chevron can't handle losing in court to indigenous people. I mean, it's that simple. You just see how they function. I think if this is like, by the way, among other things, a classic case of environmental racism. Mm-hmm. You know, if this was a community in Louisiana or Texas, they would have paid this judgment. It's brown people in Ecuador, and they just think they can ignore it. You know, so the way they've decided to spend their money is, rather than clean up the mess and rather than comply with the court order, they're paying lawyers to attack me. I mean, they're literally paying lawyers, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I mean, what we've estimated, they've spent $2-3 billion on lawyers to not
just
pay.
Just on you, just to not pay.
Just to not pay. But most of that involves attacking me and locking me up and kind of using me as a foil. I mean, if I didn't exist, they would have to invent me. they need a person to point to, you know, with this false evidence. By the way, their evidence that I bribed the judge in Ecuador, again, totally false. I've been rejected by 28 appellate judges in Ecuador and Canada, but the evidence is they paid an Ecuadorian citizen $2 million, moved his entire family to the States. The Chevron lawyers coached him for 53 consecutive days on his testimony, and he walked into Judge Kaplan's court where there was no jury. Judge Kaplan refused to give me a jury, and testified that he was in a meeting where I supposedly approved the bribe of a trial judge. No evidence, just his words, coached by the Chevron lawyers. That's the evidence. It's a joke. And again, it's been rejected by 28 appellate judges. But, you know, the crazy part is here in New York, where Judge Kaplan and Judge Presker are just hell-bent on trying to protect Chevron. That's the facts and the law. That I bribed the judge, and they're using that against me. By the way, I've never been accused of that as a criminal matter. It was always in the context of a civil case without a jury. They're petrified to give me a jury. And my recent contempt trial, which is sort of still ongoing, they again denied me a jury, and even though I faced 6 months of prison. I mean, I don't know if it's possible to be put in prison in the United States of America without a jury.
So I just want to clarify to those who are watching. I mean, this case that you helped win with another, with a pretty big, I think, team. It was a team of lawyers.
Yeah.
The case that you helped win, they were told they have to pay $18 billion in damages. And then it came down, I think it went down to like $9 billion. And then in response, they filed a $60 billion lawsuit against you for all these things, racketeering, whatever, all of these trying to bribe a judge. And then you mentioned the witness. Now, just to give people an idea of how much they've targeted you, because it's so shocking. I'm just going to read this paragraph from The Intercept. Because Chevron has actually said before that they were out to get you. Like, they've explicitly said that. And they've basically tried to ruin your life. So I'm reading from this article, The Intercept. The company, so as he was arguing the case against Chevron and Ecuador back in 2009, the company expressly said its long-term strategy was to demonize him, talking about you. And since then, Chevron has continued its all-out assault on Donziger in what's become one of the most bitter and drawn-out cases in the history of environmental law. Chevron has hired private investigators to track Donziger, created a publication to smear him, and put together a legal team of hundreds of lawyers from 60 firms who have successfully pursued an extraordinary campaign against him. As a result, Donziger has been disbarred and his bank accounts have been frozen. He now has a lien on his apartment, faces exorbitant fines, and has been prohibited from earning money. As of August, a court has seized his passport and put him on house arrest. That was August of 2019. Chevron, which has a market capitalization of $228 billion, has the funds to continue targeting Donziger for as long as it chooses. I mean, that is shocking that that's allowed to happen. It sounds like the screenplay for like a crazy Hollywood thriller. And so I guess my next question to you is, where's the media? Because I've seen you get some media attention for this, but not very much. And so have big outlets been reaching out to you? Like, why aren't you in the news regularly? This is insane.
Well, the big media has totally ignored this story in the United States. I mean, I have journalists flying 4,000 miles from Germany to interview me in my apartment, and the New York Times headquarters is a 30-minute walk, and they won't even come. So,
wow.
Look, the idea of free press in the United States needs to be put into context. I mean, there is a certain amount of freedom with the press here, but you know, the press is owned privately by major corporations, and Chevron's a major advertiser. Right. And, you know, they're just ignoring the story. Now, on the other hand, there's been some beautiful reporting by the independent media, The Nation, The Intercept, the article you just read by Sharon Lerner, by Christopher Hedges, writes in the Sheer Post, and, you know, Gizmodo, and there's a lot of articles that, you know, even Esquire magazine did a really nice interview with me. So there's a lot of articles that are great, but, you know, CNN, absent. MSNBC silent, ABC, NBC, CBS silent.
You know, it's funny, you know, we were talking before we started recording that I live in Beirut. So I'm not in the States that often these last few years, but whenever I am, I always laugh when I have the radio on in the car, because on any radio station I turn on during commercials, there's always a Chevron commercial.
Oh yeah.
There's like, and it's always like something unrelated to oil. And then suddenly at the end, you'll hear Chevron making human life better, just like something crazy. But they're everywhere.
Chevron's a major advertiser. Like if you go on the New York Times website and on the digital platform and any article about Ecuador, no matter what the topic, could be COVID, there's going to be a video about Chevron, because they know people are looking for information about me in the case by going into Ecuador. And Chevron, I found out, was the first major client of T-Brand, which is the New York Times' own ad agency. I don't know if you know, they created their own ad agency to sort of capture. So they're actually working with Chevron to create the ads that they're putting on their site, and they're refusing to cover the story, probably under pressure from Chevron. The other thing I'd add about that, you know, these advertisements, Chevron is a really regressive company that is in a state of utter decline. I mean, if they don't change their ways, I mean, not only Ecuador, but just generally how they go about their business, they're going to be phased out and they're going to just become extinct in the next 20 years. I mean, they have no commitment to clean energy. I mean, Chevron only spends 2% of its capital on what they call clean energy. 98% of their television ads are about that 2% investment in clean energy. So their advertising is totally deceptive to make the company look like it's environmentally friendly when it's probably the most polluting, destructive company, one of them on the entire planet. You know, so they're perfectly content to lock up a human rights lawyer in his home for 2 years on a misdemeanor while running completely deceptive ads and then pressuring media not to cover the story. They have a lot of power. And you know, people need to understand and really diagnose how it all works, because You know, if you walk around the United States thinking the New York Times is just going to cover all the news, I mean, it just doesn't happen, as I'm sure you know and many others, which is why you're working on these different platforms, you know. But I appreciate being on your platform. I mean, I'll talk to almost anybody. I mean, I've been on podcasts and shows on all sorts of networks around the world, but, you know, those in my home country. I know how to put a coherent sentence together. I mean, like, why not? I think the story is interesting. You know what else? No matter what you think of me or Judge Kaplan, isn't it newsworthy that an American lawyer is under house arrest for 2 years and a misdemeanor? I mean, it's just a newsworthy story. I mean, they should cut to it.
I mean, this is like, I'm just thinking about if this was like Russia or China or like any other adversary country, what a headline that would be, right? Like they, but human rights, like exactly what you just said, on house arrest over a misdemeanor charge. I mean, the U.S. tries to like justify intervening in other countries based on things like this, but then everybody just ignores it when it happens in the U.S.
And the New York Times covers these types of things in other countries on a regular basis, in Turkey and Saudi Arabia and, you know, China and Russia. I mean, but they can't handle it. It's happening. I mean, literally, you could walk out my door. Of course, I can't without permission. Walk down Broadway 30 minutes and you'd be at the New York Times headquarters.
So, like, what are your options? You're up against this company that has over like hundreds of billions of dollars. They're saying they're going to spend as many resources as it takes to screw with you and to ruin you. I imagine other companies are probably watching, like, happy this is happening to, like, other fossil fuel companies, because having to pay, even if what Chevron did is like a beyond the pale, if they have to pay an indigenous community for poisoning them, then that sets a new precedent, right? It's like, now maybe I'll do better.
Yeah, I would argue it kind of impinges heavily on their business model. I mean, this is an industry that's grifting. I mean, they go down, they privatize profits, and they socialize costs onto the most vulnerable communities on the planet. That's what happened in Ecuador. You see it in Nigeria. You see it even in the United States. Okay, they go, they take the oil, and like, oh, it's a little pollution. Let's not worry about that. The taxpayers will pay for that. We'll go run off with the profits and enrich our shareholders. And people are just fed up with that, you know. And that's what they've been doing in Ecuador for 50 years. You know, they took the money and ran, left behind the pollution. People are dying. Then they get held accountable in court and they refuse to pay the judgment. I mean, who the hell operates that way? Chevron does.
Oil company.
Yeah. I mean, and I will say this, I think this is important. Even though the big media has ignored this story in the United States, I mean, it's been covered a fair amount across the world. We have enormous support. I mean, 68 Nobel laureates have signed a letter demanding my release. Thousands of lawyers through the International Association of Democratic Lawyers have done the same. Susan Sarandon and Roger Waters and Marianne Williamson were at my trial, you know, just last week.
Shout out. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people are speaking up. They're disgusted by this. And they recognize that if we don't stop this kind of abuse of power here and now, it's going to continue and it's going to affect a lot more people.
Yeah, so that is, I mean, that's what this is about, right? It's also, it's not just about not paying. I assume this is to make an example of you.
No, right. It is about weaponizing this case and my situation to intimidate other lawyers into not doing this work. Right. And I will say this, I mean, the industry's in decline, the fossil fuel industry. You could see this last week with the Chevron and Exxon shareholder meetings. I mean, management got walloped by shareholders over climate issues. You know, two climate activists are now on Chevron's board. I mean, the message is clear. If you're running Exxon or Chevron or a big oil company, you either have to change your business model or you're going to lose your job, and shareholders will put in managers who will change the business model. That's where this is heading. You know, so, you know, locking up a lawyer doesn't really fit into the new business model that the oil industry is going to need to survive. You know, and I will say this, I think this is a major litmus test for the Biden administration on climate. Like, how do you purport to support the Green New Deal in the United States, or climate justice, when a leading human rights lawyer who won probably the biggest environmental case ever is locked up without trial, without a jury, you know, when 28 judges have affirmed the validity of the judgment that he won? I mean, that's just unbelievable. So we've been calling on Joe Biden and the new U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland to intervene in my case, to take back the prosecution from the private Chevron law firm and to prosecute me directly. I'm probably the only lawyer in U.S. history who is literally begging the U.S. Department of Justice to prosecute him. I would love to be prosecuted by Merrick Garland because that way I could at least deal with a professional. And by the way, they already turned down this case. So I think once they looked at it again, they would probably dismiss it and let me go. But no one should be prosecuted by a private corporation in any rule of law country, much less the United States of America. And that's what's happening to me. So we're calling on the DOJ, the U.S. Department of Justice, to intervene and stop this case immediately.
Is there a similar precedent, I'm curious, of a party to a lawsuit effectively controlling the court proceedings like in your case?
I've never seen it. Thank God. I mean, there's a lot of looseness with the rules, depending. But man, I have never seen this. I've never seen a corporate prosecution before, and no one has. It's outrageous.
And then I guess, you know, what I would like to ask you is more on a personal note. I mean, how are you holding up? You've been in, you know, you've been stuck at home for 2 years almost.
It's not easy. I'm strong and I'm resilient and I'm an optimist by nature. And, you know, I live with my wife and 14-year-old son, Laura and Matthew. And, you know, we every day try to create happiness in our home, even though I'm under house arrest. I mean, it's hardest on my son. I mean, he's deprived of his dad being able to be a dad. And my wife, you know, and I wear an ankle bracelet 24/7. I sleep with it. I eat with it. I bathe with it. You know, it talks to me. It beeps. I can't wear shorts outside because it's embarrassing to my son, just people to see it. You know, I can't go to the beach. I have an ankle bracelet. I mean, you know, look, I want to say there's people in the justice system in America who have it a lot worse than I do, you know, with police racism being an example. But I've never seen like a lawyer who won a case dumped into his apartment for 2 years like this. It's really scary. This is kind of a new animal for the United States and people need to pay attention.
Yeah. And it doesn't just, I mean, people should understand too. It doesn't just pose a threat to lawyers. I mean, this could extend to, Lawyers, journalists,
protesters, activists who protest Standing Rock pipelines. I mean, this is not just about lawyers. It's about the people who do the frontline work to create environmental justice and save the planet. And if you think this, I'm just like about a pollution case, we want a judgment. No, this case that the people of Ecuador won, it's not my case. First of all, it's their case. And a lot of lawyers helped other than me. But this case, this great historic victory, they are trying to destroy it because they cannot handle the symbolism of what the communities in Ecuador accomplished. They cannot handle the fact that Americans like myself, North Americans, and indigenous people in the forest joined forces and created a united front to hold a polluter accountable. They've never seen that before. You know, so they're trying to destroy this case. But not only this case, Rania, they're trying to destroy the very idea of this case. They don't want this ever to happen again. And that's why they're spending hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars on 60 law firms to go after me. They just don't want lawyers doing this work, which, by the way, is intimately connected to the survival of the planet. Like, if you can't hold major polluters like Chevron accountable, they'll keep polluting, and the acceleration of the destruction of climate change will continue, and we'll all suffer and die eventually.
No, it's really dark to think about, especially when it really gives you a lens into just how much power these sort of forces we're all up against have. When they're able to not just control the courts, but control the media. And it's utterly shocking. But for people who are listening and watching, how can they help? What is there anything people can do?
We have a website called freedonziger.com. The second website called Donziger Defense. Really go to Donziger Defense, one word, DONZIGER.com. And you can join our campaign. You will get regular emails, updates, and you can also donate to my legal defense fund. And I ask people, if you are in a position to donate even modest amounts, please do. We have over 6,000 people who've donated an average of about $30 over the last several years. And, you know, dealing with this monster polluter takes resources. I mean, I have a lot of lawyers who are involved in helping me. Many work pro bono, but not all. And I also have been deprived of earning a living. I mean, they disbarred me based on Judge Kaplan's finding that I bribed the judge. I would say false finding that I bribed the judge. And I'm locked up. So we use some of the money to pay our household expenses. But if you go to the website, donzigerdefense.com, that's the best way to help me. Even if you can't give money, please sign up for the campaign.
Yeah, they're like attacking your whole family. I mean, if deprive somebody from the ability to earn a living.
Oh, yeah.
It's like taking food out of your kid's mouth.
Well, I would. I mean, yeah, they've stolen my son's.
Hey, sorry. I don't mean to like take up so much of your time.
That's okay.
I assume I just blame Chevron.
You're telling me the lights go out there. My son is doing a lot of schooling from home, and he's on. I think we got a little overloaded on my end.
Well, can I just finish asking? You were about to say something that I think was really powerful. The fact that just before we close here, the fact that this has kind of been like an attack, not just on you but on your family. They've made it impossible for you to even earn a living. And I cannot imagine that's easy for your wife and kid.
No, I mean, it's been really tough for my wife, Laura, and my 14-year-old son, Matthew. You know, when they did this, I knew their little game was to destroy me economically. You know, it's what Putin does in Russia to his opponents. They make these sort of fake legal cases and use the judiciary to make it look like there's a real case. And it's really a form of judicial violence, and it's really a new method used by many autocrats, dictators, authoritarian countries to try to put a veneer of law over what is really politics and political attacks on dissidents. So it's tough, you know, it's tough to explain to your kid that the very judicial system that he's taught in school is fair. And the place people go to get justice is the one that's been weaponized by a private oil company to attack his father, and in the process is violating every basic tenet of the rule of law known to womankind, you know? So it's been a hell of an education for all of us, and in particular my son, our family members. I mean, look, I come from a fairly privileged background. You know, I grew up upper middle class and, you know, with a lot of benefits, white man in America, you know, and went to Harvard Law School even. By the way, I was in Barack Obama's class. So it's not like I'm coming at this from, you know, a place of, I'm not an outsider. I mean, I'm very much part of the establishment in the United States. And it almost, it's almost like they want to go after me with even more vitriol and more.
You're a traitor.
More appetite, because they consider me a traitor to my class. And I'm not a traitor to my class. I mean, first of all, class schmat. I mean, I'm a man who believes in the law and in justice for people who are hurt, who are hurting. You know, I mean, I actually thought when I went to law school, if you did this kind of work, you'd actually get praise. Mm-hmm. And I have gotten praise, you know, but that's not obviously what it's about. It's about actually getting a result for people. But I certainly didn't think the system would turn against me like this, and that a corporation would be able to prosecute me. I mean, whatever we did, it's so threatening that they're violating every rule known to the U.S. judiciary to lock me up, you know, from putting in fake evidence to ignoring, you know, the judge selection process to getting a private law firm to prosecute me because the regular prosecutor would not take the case. I mean, there are so many rules being violated, denying me a jury. I'm the first person in U.S. history denied a jury in a civil RICO case, racketeering.
I'm telling you, this is a Hollywood screen. Like, it's like this is, it's a script is writing itself here. And
well, I think it's a hell of a story, but I mean, you know, the question is, what would the title be? To me, it's like American Kafka, because it's Kafkaesque. I mean, I don't know what kind of, you know, successful Hollywood films usually have an upbeat ending. So we'll see how this one turns out. But, you know, I'm hopeful that we'll get through this and get out the other side. I mean, I do take a lot of solace knowing that they're spending massive sums of money to attack me. I mean, obviously this has been highly successful, this campaign and this lawsuit. And, you know, they're pulling out all the stops. I mean, if you just took the amount of money they've spent on legal fees, which we estimate at $3 billion, and that's money they're not spending to take oil out of the ground, we've calculated that our work as a team has saved the world from the emissions of millions of people on an annual basis. As a matter of fact, every $1 billion that they spend fighting this lawsuit versus pulling oil out of the ground saves enough emissions to cover the entire population of Houston, Texas for a year.
Wow.
So, I mean, they need to pay the judgment in Ecuador.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, this work is successful. I mean, it really is imposing a degree of accountability on Chevron that's enormous. I mean, they're really on, I think they're on the ropes. I think, you know, what they're doing to me is an act of utter desperation.
It's like flailing desperately.
It reflects their fear. And as I've always said, if I didn't exist, they'd invent me. They'd invent someone else to play this role.
Yeah.
You know, you asked about the media earlier. I mean, even in articles from the independent media in the United States, like The Nation, they'll then, once they appear, they'll buy Google ads to surround the links to the article when you Google it, that puts out, it's basically their smear website about me.
Wow.
And they are trying to smear me every day of the week, and they're spending massively to do it. Now, I am on Twitter with a, you know, I have like a moderately decent following. By the way, if anyone's listening to this, please follow me. It's at S. Donziger, where I provide a lot of case updates. So, you know, they can't just silence me totally, but, you know, they try to do their best to shape my reputation and smear me.
Yeah.
And it's scary, Rania, to be smeared by an entity with this much power.
I can't even imagine that. I mean, you're taking on a really, an enemy that I don't think I would, I imagine that what they're doing to you, not to be cynical, but what they're doing to you definitely would make someone watching think twice about going up against a Chevron or something like it in this sort of case. And that's why it's so important for people to share your story and to support you and what you're dealing with, because it's actually much bigger than you, as we've talked about. On that note, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on and explaining what's happening. We're all behind you.
Thank you.
And I hope we can have you on sometime soon with better news.
Yeah, let's do this again at the appropriate time. And I want to thank you and your colleagues for doing good journalism, independent journalism. It's so critically important to keep people informed. So congratulations on your success.
Well, thank you for that.